Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, for all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And for today's show, we will be talking about love of nature. Please feel free to participate or just listen. And let me introduce my co-host, Kat Edwards. Kat, how are you today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you, David. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thank you. Yes. Now, Kat suggested the topic. She had actually talked about love of plants, right?
Yes.
I expanded a little bit so we can cover that in the discussion as well. Kat, would you like to lead off with some of your ideas? And then I will chip in, and we have caller Al, who is a frequent caller to the show, who might want to speak too.
Yes, okay. Well, thanks to everybody who's tuned in for starters. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. So I think that we need to remember nature now more than ever because of everything that's going on in the world, and there's so much dysfunction and double standards, hypocrisy, so many things that aren't right. Having said that, that's only a small aspect of the fact that there's so much that's good. And actually, the good outweighs the bad when you really look at it. And what is good is the whole planet. She is good. Her consciousness is good. And she expresses her consciousness through nature. And what a wonderful, wonderful way to express herself. A ferocious way, a magnificent, magnanimous way to express who she is. And, sometimes we can suffer if there's a hurricane or a cyclone or an earthquake. We can suffer from nature's wrath. But many times we benefit from nature and her incredible beauty and what she gives to us. We cannot survive without her, and yet human beings have raped and pillaged her for so long now. And I think it's now more than ever, it's time that we change our direction, our thinking, and we give back. And I mean business. We need to change the way we do business. Because let's face it, it's not mums and dads who are destroying Delta regions so they can put in a road. It's not mums and dads that are there, ripping up the Amazon and other rainforest and burning it down. It's businesses. And, we need to change the way that we think about our economic footprint on the planet. And we need to start to really double down on our love for her and utilize that for the benefit of all. What do you think, David?
Well, I agree. I find that, first of all, without nature, we wouldn't exist. And we are destroying our planet, and we need to wake up to taking responsibility not only for ourselves but especially for future generations if they're going to be able to survive whatever deficits will have occurred as a result of global warming, which we are responsible for. I will just say I want to later on share some of my experiences with nature that have been so profound for me. But I'm stumbling around here. There was something that I Googled that I thought was interesting, and that was 10 reasons why we can love nature. And it brings us to our senses. It makes us smarter. We get to solve cool mysteries through nature. It's incredibly fun. It feeds us in so many ways. For me, the greatest way it serves me is through feelings and through my spirit. It's just such an uplifting thing to see a sunset or a rainbow or to be at the ocean. I feel really in tune with life and one with all that is. And so it feeds me wonderfully. It helps us feel wild again. I'm not sure what that means. We have wild animals, which are absolutely amazing, and it boosts creativity. And just think of all the artists that have captured an essence of nature in their artwork, and the photographers that have captured wonderful images of things that will never repeat themselves. So those are just a few things that I wanted to add. And I'm going to turn it back to you, Kat, and I have other things I'd like to say, but I'll turn it back to you.
Well, Lao Tzu that says that if you're seeking perfection in the universe, you need to just start looking at nature. Because nature expresses herself perfectly. When she's in balance, all things work well. Everything comes to pass in a united and congruent way. The food chain properly serves and everything remains centered. And I think that we need to look at our internal life as nature as well, that when we are in balance, we are completely centered. All things within us are working properly. As above, so below. So the internal life must also be expressed externally. And I think there's some really interesting initiatives that go on because of wanting to change the way that we work with the byproducts of being human. One of them is, I'm right into watching building shows. I absolutely love learning about different styles of buildings and homes in particular, and I've got an obsession with it because I want to build my own home. And I keep saying I want a home that feels like a hug when I walk through the door. And so I've gone exploring about different building techniques and different building materials, and I'm very interested in eco-friendly ways of doing things. And the Earthship keeps coming up. And the Rand Earth Home, and the Earthship's really interesting. It started by an architect called Michael Reynolds in New Mexico. And he started to design houses that were built out of rammed earth into tires and other bits and pieces of usable garbage that he found, like bottles and beer cans. And he's created these amazing, beautiful buildings that are 70 degrees Fahrenheit, which is approximately about 20 degrees centigrade at all times during the year. It's not just about the material, it's about the orientation of the house on the land, and I think also the way that it's painted and the different ways that it's created so that there's airflow through the house. But it's essentially warm in winter and cool in summer. And, of course, he had to really work hard to get it passed, but he finally did get approval to make these houses, but it's all fringe dwellers that live there because it's seen as crazy to build a house out of reusable products. Yet we're always, and here in Australia, they're always pushing reuse, recycle. So you'd think that we'd be wanting to reuse, recycle all of these products. I mean, imagine if we gathered up all the rubbish that's in the oceans and built houses out of it. All these people who are homeless, all these poor people who are homeless, would have somewhere to go. I think that we have so much responsibility to cleaning up, and I think that we need to be more worried about the world rubbish crisis than we do global warming, because we're going to choke her out before she cooks. So we absolutely have to change that. My permanent disgust at the moment is that wherever I walk, there are disposable face masks on the ground. And I find that just an absolutely filthy, disgusting thing that people are doing to our beautiful planet. That's a human-imposed thing to have a face mask. The birds didn't ask you to do it, and yet they're dumped everywhere. Did you find that in the US? Are you guys still wearing face masks there, and are you finding them dumped everywhere?
Well, people are wearing them for the most part. I haven't observed them being dumped, so that's interesting and disturbing.
Mm. Yeah, it's absolutely disgusting. I mean, why, there's a bin. Why do you have to dump it on the ground?
Well,
and then animals get that.
Right. I mean, it's like cigarette butts or gum, things that are toxic to birds. And, you know, I mean, we have a responsibility to clean up after ourselves. And I was reading something about six ways to express love to Mother Nature, and two of them are to pick up trash that you come across and then to commit to reusable utensils, coffee mugs, water bottles, etc. So, you know, to recycle things as well. You know, nature is, I mean, without it, where would we be? We wouldn't be here. And Emerson was saying that it's beautiful because it's alive, moving, and reproductive. And I think that's interesting to reflect upon. What do you think?
Well, there's so much that you can, well, there is nothing that you don't have that isn't from nature. Absolutely everything around you has been derived from her, including your own body. But if we start to think about the way we live, as you said, sorry, I'm eating my breakfast at the same time. I've got to shoot off to work after I finish this broadcast.
No problem.
If you think about the way that you live and you start to be conscious in your living, then you can start to support Mother Nature and you can be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And I think that that's so important. But do you have plants inside your home, David? Do you care for plants outside in the garden?
Well, I used to. I must confess I'm not very good at keeping them up. But they certainly do enhance a home. And I have had them in the past and have appreciated them. And for whatever reason, they did not endure for a long time. But I would say that's probably my fault, that I've been neglectful or overwatered them or whatever. But I'm sure that you must have a lot of plants inside, don't you?
I don't have a whole lot because I don't have a lot of places to put them. If I was living alone, I'd have a house full of plants. And if I own my own home, I'd have a garden full of plants that were native to the area, but specifically attracted birds and butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be, but I'd also be wanting to put food plants in my garden as well, so that I could teach my children about how nature just provides. So I remember when I was a little girl, my parents put food plants in our garden. I just used to run through and pick beans off the vine. And that's the absolute best way to eat, isn't it? It's, you know, and when you're growing up, just to, yeah.
It is. And I will say this about plants. I have a multitude of plants outside. I have 13 garden beds. And I've concentrated on flowers and flowering shrubs. And it's just beautiful in the springtime. It's become a little daunting for me, the care of all of those flowers, so I have help with that, and I'll be moving sometime the end of the year or next year, and the home I'm moving to will be simpler, but I will have a garden.
Well, and that will be so nice. There's
mm-hmm.
something very therapeutic about gardening. I mean, if you're out there and you're digging a hole and you're angry, you can get that out. That can be therapeutic, but it can also be meditative and therapeutic and caring for plants and chipping dead flowers off and just having something to care for. There's a deep connection that goes within you when you start to have someone to care for, no matter what body they occupy.
Yes.
And plants are quite interesting. Like they've discovered a couple of decades ago, ecologist Susan Simard discovered that trees communicate with each other, and they essentially, they're sending nutrients via a lattice of like fungi that's buried in the soil. So through their root system, they're utilizing this fungi that then sends information to the other roots, and so the trees all talk to each other. But I've actually experienced some profound things with plants, and so when I have plants, they're my little friends. I talk to them. I'm not ashamed to say I talk to plants, David. Okay, and I have little conversations with them, and I love them. I love my plants. I even give some of my plants names. And when I was in my early 20s, I was a single mom. I had two babies, and I had filled my unit, which in America you would call an apartment. I'd filled it with plants, and I'd gone out, and I came home with groceries, carrying two babies up a flight of stairs with a bunch of groceries. So I had this whole way of doing that. Basically, I carried two backpacks, one on each side of my body, a baby in a carrier, and the older one on my hip. Anyway, this guy that lived in the block of units, because I couldn't go back downstairs to get the rest of the groceries. We couldn't leave two babies by themselves in the unit, you know. So I just used to do it. So this guy said, hey, I'll give you a hand. So he carried one of the backpacks upstairs, or both, I can't remember, probably both. And when he walked in the door, all the plants made him feel very uncomfortable. And I literally felt like if the plants had heads, they would have turned and given him the death stare. I felt the energy. And I said, oh, I don't think my plants want you here. And he said, you've got a beautiful flat, but I agree. And off he went. And then my plants seemed to relax once he was gone. They did not like him, so he had bad energy. But the shamans talk about the energy of plants. Well, I discovered later that he was a bit of a druggo, so, yeah. That's why my plants didn't like him.
Well, it's the plants respond to us when we talk to them, and that they do better when you talk to them. So there is communication between humans and plants.
Well, there's a deep communication between humans and plants. So we're intrinsically communicate with each other. Now, we eat plants. Plants exist for our survival. If we didn't have plants and we only ate animals, we'd all die pretty badly. You know, it wouldn't look good. There'd be a lot of cancer. You need to have a balanced diet full of plants. It has to be the highest part of your diet. I was watching a documentary recently, and they were talking about centenarians, so people who've lived over 100 years, and their diets, and the particular parts of the world where they call them blue zones, where these centenarians live, and they're ethnic people by and large, and not Western people. And every single pocket of centenarians have a small amount of protein on their plate, and the rest is made of plants, and that includes carbs. So they eat carbs and they eat plants. And plants, of course, carbs are derived from plants. So they mainly have a plant-based diet, and that is part of the secret of their longevity. And I think that we need to really consider how we eat and eat in alignment with nature. Eat seasonally. So eat fruits and vegetables that are grown to your season rather than having stuff that's imported from a different part of the world. So it's, be really nice to have a strawberry in December here in Australia, but that's not seasonal for us. Strawberries are seasonally grown in the cooler months between June to November. And I know that's your hotter month, but that's our cooler months for anyone who's getting confused. We have to, if we eat seasonally, we're eating in alignment with nature. And that's so important, don't you think, to align yourself with the cycles of nature?
Yes, I do. I thought maybe this might be a good time to bring Al on board and see what he might share connected to nature or any anecdotes he might want to share. So let me bring him on the line.
Hello, Kat and David.
Hi, Al.
Hi, Kat. So much that you both said, I know nature is a part of what I might call my spirituality. Nature is rather important to me. It's a part of my centering myself, and I like walks. I notice that I have to slow myself down if I want to appreciate nature and to be present in it. So I like the fact that I have to make that conscious choice to slow down and notice. It really helps me center quite a bit. And I liked what you were saying, Kat, about it sounded like how we can integrate our own living in cities and suburbs and whatnot and make it more congruent with nature. And I guess I did, it just seems like such a big challenge. It seems possible, but it also seems that with burgeoning populations that is going to get more and more difficult to try to integrate with nature without actually overtaking it in the process. And I've been, following things on new building designs like you talked about. And it seems like there's a lot we could do if we decide to commit ourselves to making that kind of difference in our environment. I wish I was better with plants myself. I'm not very good at communing with my plants, or I would take better care of them. I'm much better communing with nature when I'm on a walk than actually taking care of those plants that I have. But I think that would be a great exercise for me to have more consciousness about the plants I actually have in my care. I have been very good about taking care of plants on my porch this summer, but I have some indoor plants that really need my attention. I haven't been giving it to them. It does seem like if I did that it would help me in my greater consciousness of nature and my being a part of it. It's another step I could take beyond just trying to be centered when I'm out in nature and about. And what was said about we can't really exist without plants. I mean, that's very true from a biological point of view. We can't do without them, and yet we're decimating our forests, and we're creating monocultures, and we're killing out even the plant species. We've had to rely on banks of seeds to make sure that we don't extinguish some species. So I don't know. I'd be interested in hearing what either of you have to say about trying to integrate ourselves as a burgeoning population with nature, how we might come across to some sort of balance or even some middle ground until we can do more. Thank you.
What do you have to say about that, Kat? I don't have too much that I can think of offhand.
I just saw a mouse run across my floor.
little nature got into that.
We need to have a revolution, and it doesn't have to be a violent one, but we need to have a revolution, as in a turning and a different way that we cast our eye on the way that we live and how we build our homes and how we eat our food, how we farm our food, and how we exist in alignment with nature rather than how we take from nature to get what we want. I don't think there's any one particular force within the human psyche that has got us where we are. I think it's several. I think that when Abrahamic religions took over the Western planet, the Western world, and they started to demonize people worshipping nature, that created big problems because that caused people to separate themselves and to stop looking to nature for their greater sense of connection. And they started to look to a force outside of her. I think business has done it as well, because business has taken nature and utilized her as a consumable product. And I don't know enough about the geology of utilizing oil. But it seems to me, if you look inside your body, oil is used as a lubricant, in particular for your joints. It's used as a lubricant for your brain to work properly, and it keeps your skin supple. It's necessary for hair growth and health. And if you remove oil from the system, things begin to dry up and crack. And I just wonder if a lot of these earthquakes that we've been experiencing aren't because there's not enough oil lubricating the planet. Now, she is a big body, and a big body needs soil. So, you know, I'm concerned that business has done that. I mean, we need cars. I've got a car. It runs on diesel. But I am very well connected to some people who are working towards a solution there that does not involve any oil for vehicles to run, and I'm not at liberty to broadcast about that at the moment. But it is the fact that I'm around the conscious living people, and so as you get to know conscious living people, you start to get to know people who are doing business in a different way, and they're doing it in a way that makes you want to work with the planet rather than take from her, and this is what we need to do. I think that's really the answer. Now, there's little eco-villages that go around, that are around the planet at the moment too, people are getting involved in, and they're communities where they work cooperatively, they make decisions and they control their own energy and water and food. They work towards ecological sustainability, social prosperity and economic viability. I think that we need to study these different eco-villages. We can't go into communism because that doesn't work. But we do need to take the parts of ideas like this that do work and the parts of ideas from other ecologically sustainable workings that are going on around the world and bring together a new way where we're all working together towards a peaceful, healthy planet, and we as humans are in that ecosystem as apex predators, rather than on that ecosystem, raping and pillaging it and causing it to be in sufferance. So, yeah, that would be my answer to what Al was saying, is we need to look at, there's a lot of eco-villages around the world, and that to me seems like a logical place to start, is to start to look at why these residents chose to live this way. What is it about the eco-village life that works? What do they struggle with? How can we utilize this for the better? We need to create a new system now. You know, the world's going into totalitarian decay, and it's only going to get worse. So when it comes to totalitarianism, the answer is to create a viable alternative option and to start working in that viable alternative option alongside the totalitarianism until more and more people jump off the mindset of the totalitarianism and into the alternative option, and then they essentially stop looking and giving the totalitarianism any energy, and it dies away because it can only be powerful while other people give it power, and it's the few taking power over the masses. Whereas if we all work together in a way that's not communistic but is in a sustainable economy in an eco way, we'll start being part of this, we'll be connected, and we'll start being part of the solution instead of remaining in this disconnected problem that we have. So yeah, eco housing is a really fantastic way of looking at life, and the social disconnection that we have, because we've been going down this path for a long time. Let's face it, it's not a new thing. It's just the hammer fist fall has come down now. It's particularly come bad in my country, and we need to look at a better way. We need to look at a way that helps our planet. Because if we don't have her, we're dead. And I really love her. When I was a kid, we used to go camping all the time, and I used to drink the water from the streams. And then I remember when I was in my early 20s, I went camping with my cousin, and we went to a stream near where I used to camp when I was a kid, and I went to drink the water and it was polluted, and it devastated me. Yeah. So I think that, what do you think about that idea, David?
Well, because time is running short, I was going to kind of switch gears a little bit, if people don't mind, and talk a little bit about my own experience with nature that created this great love for it within me, and I would welcome you and Al to do the same briefly. I was introduced to nature vis-a-vis a family camp on one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York, and it was a primitive camp that did not use the sorts of energy that we have available now, and it's still the case. There's no electricity. There's no indoor plumbing. It's an outhouse, and it's set in the woods. The cabin was built by my father, his brothers, and my grandfather, and I just remember spending summers there and enjoying the water and enjoying the forest. I loved waking up to the sound of water lapping on the shore and the birds singing. It was just a wonderful experience. And I also was privileged to be able to travel to many of the national parks, which are natural wonders here in the United States. And I'm so grateful that my father treated us to those vacations, where I came to really appreciate awe-inspiring natural situations like the Grand Canyon and the Grand Tetons, which are rocky mountains for lack of a better word, I think that they, tetons have to do with tits. I don't know, but that's what they look like. Of course, going to the ocean was a wonderful experience, and I'm pleased to see that we have another caller that's called in. Thank you, area code 415, for joining us. We are talking about love of nature today, and now we're sharing some personal experiences, and if you would be interested in doing that, I will come to you, and if you don't want to do that, that's fine. We'd just like to know your first name and how you found us. So let me give the microphone to Al and see if there's anything he would like to share.
I came to love nature because as a boy, I lived in the city, but my parents had four children, including me, and a moderate income. And the way that we were able to go and do a lot of things as a family was camping. So during the summers and fall, we were oftentimes going away for a weekend to campgrounds, particularly the Adirondacks in New York State where I live. And my, you know, we would go for walks while we were there, and my dad was he knew what all the different trees were, so he was oftentimes giving us a little lesson on what the various trees were. And he also loved gardening, as did my mom. So I was always aware of, they always tried to have a nice yard full of flowers and plants and indoor plants, and both my parents enjoyed that. He was oftentimes starting seedlings in the basement until spring came around to give them a little head start. But I think the camping was the thing that made the biggest difference for me and my love of nature. Thank you, David and Kat.
How about you, Kat? Do you have any anecdotes you'd like to share?
Oh, certainly. When I was a kid, my parents took me camping with my three brothers as well. And it was that really impressed upon me the beauty and majesty of nature. And it's also where I began my lifelong love for shamanism and Indigenous culture, because I was being taken out to these places where Aboriginal people had ancient galleries, you know, caves full of hand paintings and paintings of spirits, and it was this ancient stuff. And living in Australia, there's not a lot of ancient architecture here because it's only a couple hundred years old as far as white settlement goes. But I was seeing this ancient artwork, and I was seeing the evidence of humanity from long, long time ago. And I was seeing solitary little creatures like platypus. That it's very, very difficult to see a platypus because they're quiet, frightened little creatures. And I was able to see some. I saw dugongs in the ocean. And when I was in New Caledonia, which is in the sort of international waters just off east of Cairns and north. Cairns is in tropical North Queensland, and then if you go east and get into international waters, you'll find New Caledonia, and it's a French colony. And I was there with Year 11 French camp, and we went snorkeling around this island off of the main island in New Caledonia called Amity Island, and it's just got a lighthouse and you can walk around it in about an hour, half an hour, something like that. But the fish life there was absolutely amazing. I had the option of going in a glass bottom boat to look at them, and I didn't want to. I grabbed some bread and I was in the water and I was there amongst the fish, hanging out with them. They were cool. They were little friends. I loved it. There were sea snakes everywhere. They didn't seem to want to be interested in me. And I was just in my element, absolutely loving up every little creature that would want to talk to me. And that's sort of the way that I've always been when it comes to nature, is I've looked at it as an extension of friends. So you've got human friends, but why stop there? Why stop there? And there's plant friends and there's animal friends, and they're really cool and they know stuff. And you know, why not extend yourself out to them and enrich your life, and maybe their life could be enriched by you. So I've always sort of had that feeling towards nature that I was part of it rather than separate to it, looking at it from the outside as if I was looking at a painting and not part of that. You know, I've never been a disconnection for me. It's always been immersive. A great sadness in my life was that when I had my two boys, I couldn't take them camping because of their special needs and learning difficulties, and it was just too hard on my own. And then with these two little ones that I've got now, there was just too much going on and we haven't been. So we get out and go local bushwalks. And I went through a stage of climbing the Glasshouse Mountains. And they're north of Brisbane on the Sunshine Coast near Australia Zoo. So Australia Zoo's east of the Glasshouse Mountains. And certain mountains are cool to climb. The local Aboriginal people have other mountains in that pocket of mountain, in that range of mountains, that are quite sacred, and they have good reason for it. And so climbing these mountains, you start to see incredible plant life. There's a mountain behind Birwa village that has, as you ascend it, you start to see these gum trees, and they've got beautiful colours in the bark. They're rainbow gums. They're incredible. And, you know, I'd never have known about them, that they were there, if I hadn't gone and taken the time to get out into nature. A couple of years ago, we took our kids down to the Gold Coast, which is south of Brisbane. We could have gone to the theme parks, but we did. We went one day. It was just dissatisfying. I mean, it was fun for the kids, but there was an element of dissatisfaction. I said, let's get out. Let's go find a park. We went down to Tweed Heads, and we started to explore that area, and we found this park with ancient, giant fig trees in a grove. I mean, these things absolutely dwarfed my partner, who's 6 foot tall. They were massive, and the kids were delighted to be playing in amongst their root system, and their root system was as tall as a man. You know, they're incredible. And then we went for another walk in nature around looking for some falls. And we went to a lookout, and that was the time of the terrible bushfires that hit Australia, and we could see the smoke everywhere. But we could look out into the ocean from there. It was just incredible. And when I think about whenever I've been in nature, I'm desperate to get back. And I think that's been the adjustment period that I've had in this new job that I've got, which I love my job, but inside in artificial light with artificial air and no windows in the office that I'm in, I absolutely struggled because I had no connection to nature throughout the day. And then somebody, one of my co-workers, showed me where there was a park. So I'm down that park. That's where I go. That's where I'm having my lunch. Because nature absolutely refills me. I feel like I'm alive again. And I can cope with whatever's on my plate because I've had that food of being immersed with her. Yeah, so that's my experience in a nutshell.
Thanks, Kat. Let's just take a moment and go to area code 415 and see if there's anything they'd like to say. Hi, what is your first name, please?
Hi, this is Anne, and I'm just listening today. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne, for joining us. Okay, I'd like to just point out that we do have a Facebook fan page, and we're always looking for topics, and we love it when our callers offer topics. We don't have one for next week at present. And you can find us on Facebook, The Healing Circle, with David Clark and Kat Edwards. And Kat has been gracious enough to set up the page, and you can like us, you can make comments, and we would love to have your company, if you will, on that fan page. Kat, is there anything else you'd like to say about the Facebook page?
Yeah, just get on there and check it out. You can listen to old podcasts by clicking on the links that are on the page. And if you go to David's radio station on Blog Talk Radio, you can listen to even older podcasts of us that go back to in January 2019, I think.
I believe so.
And also on there are episodes of David's regular Friday night show, which is called Different Strokes with Different Folks, and he interviews really interesting spiritual people from around the world. And that's always worth listening to. And you may even get a reading. So check out David's Blog Talk Radio channel. It is called David Clark with an E, C-L-A-R-K-E. And you can find that on Blog Talk Radio. But please, if you have a topic in mind, as long as it's around conscious living and healing of oneself, we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to hear what you'd like us to discuss.
Thanks, Kat. And the link that you can go to listen to the podcast that we've done is blogtalkradio.com/author David Clark, spelled with an E. So check it out. And now, meditation. I would invite you all to take a moment. This is a suggestion that you go to some place in your house where there's a plant, or you go to a window and look out at a plant outside, and just keep your focus on that as you begin to take deep breaths, deep healing breaths, breathing in slowly and breathing out through your mouth very slowly. And repeat that two more times. And so imagine a female robin roosting on her nest as she incubates her eggs, and the father brings food to the mother and the babies that soon hatch, the baby birds, and the parents teach their birds how to fly, how to find food, and eventually they leave the nest. And one day, one of the birds comes to a plant and finds you, and you are a seed in the plant. And the bird eats the seed, and when the bird excretes the seed, it falls into fertile soil, where it takes root and begins to grow slowly as it pushes itself up through the surface of the soil. And it's a beautiful, beautiful flower. And that is who you've become as you've gone through a metamorphosis that is unique to nature. And as you grow, you feel the sunshine that nourishes you and the water from the rain that nourishes you. And you grow into this beautiful, beautiful flower. Perhaps you're a peony. Lovely, large flowers of various hues. And you embrace all that is around you. You are one with all that is. And as you return to your human experience, you begin to recall that you are one with all that is. And I invite you, if you have closed your eyes, to open them and look at the plants that you may have been gazing at anyway, the trees, and realize how much nature nurtures you, just as the sunshine and the rain nurtured you as a plant. And so, when you're ready, come back to your present surroundings. And that is all for today, folks. Thank you so much for joining us. Please tune in again next week at the same day and time. And Kat, I wish you a good day.
And I wish you a good evening. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. And thanks, Al.
Thanks, Al. Okay. Take care, everybody. We'll look forward to meeting with you again.
Goodbye.